Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. During the first half of today's show, we are joined by Tom Hartman, a nationally syndicated talk show host. His show airs daily from 9 to noon Pacific time on Sirius XM. You can also find his shows on YouTube and other platforms. Tom Hartman is the author of many books, including The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream, and The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. He also writes a regular column for Common Dreams. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Rose. Thank you.
Glad Tom, to be here. It's wild to think that you were on the radio every day for 3 hours. And you have been doing this work now for how long?
We've been doing the show for 21 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So you've been in the thick of it for decades. You've written so many books about politics and how we got to this place. What are your overall thoughts about major media coverage of Donald Trump and this election?
Wow. The media has just done an absolutely terrible job for all 9 years, basically, of Trump's presence on the national stage. Instead of calling him what he is and who he is and identifying how weird and outrageous and un-American, essentially, his positions are, they've tried to treat him as if he was a normal politician, and it's wrong. He's not a normal politician. He's a carnival barker and a hustler and a con man and a criminal and a fascist. And the media should have been pointing that out for 9 years, and instead some of them are just starting to wake up, and it might be too late.
Why do you think that's the case?
I think part of it is the old Lee Atwater thing, you know, the 80s, I think it was, that Lee Atwater came up with this idea of working the ref, that you yell and scream whenever the media says anything bad about Republicans, and eventually they have kind of a burned fingers syndrome. They're just afraid to touch stories that might look bad for Republicans, and that has certainly happened, and that it's been a very successful effort, over the last 40 years. So I think part of it is that. I think part of it is that as Les Moonves, the former CEO of CBS, said on an investor call back in 2016, he said, Donald may be terrible for America, but he's the best thing that ever happened for our ratings. Keep it up, Donald. I'm right. Paraphrasing, but it's pretty close to that. And the dividing line between entertainment and news really came crashing down in 1987 when Reagan ended the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine required radio and television stations to do what was called broadcasting the public interest, and that was broadly understood to mean that on radio at the top of every hour and on television for at least a half hour to an hour during prime time, you would have actual real news. And that obligation ended. In fact, Reagan ended the Fairness Doctrine in 87, and by 88, by the summer of 88, all three television networks had moved their news divisions out of being a standalone product that consistently lost money but was the cost of the licenses into being a subsidiary of their entertainment division. And it's been that way ever since. So now, instead of information, we have infotainment. And, it's more profitable. And Donald Trump is the ultimate, entertainment. He says outrageous things. He does outrageous things. The old saying in news is people slow down for fistfights and car wrecks. And he's always one or the other or both.
That is connected to the recent column you wrote, U.S. Fascism Has Arrived, Thanks to 30 Years of Right-Wing Talk Radio Dominance. So you've got Reagan striking down the Fairness Doctrine, and then you have Bill Clinton signing the Telecom Act of 1996, which ended limits on how many radio or TV stations a single corporation or billionaire could own. And this is such an important stat to talk about. You write, today there are over 1,500 right-wing radio stations in the U.S., along with another 700 or so religious stations that regularly endorse Republican memes and candidates for office. That's a lot of radio stations.
Yeah, it is. There's pretty much no place in America where you can't hop in your car and find a right-wing radio station. And there are, across the red states, generally speaking, you can't find anything that resembles progressive talk radio. So, you know, it's kind of a desert for the left out there. And this was very smart action on the part of the Republicans and their billionaire buddies, you know, back in the 80s when Limbaugh rolled, with the guy who runs the company that syndicates my show, Ron Hartenbaum, was one of the handful of guys who got together and first syndicated Limbaugh, and they had some big money behind them. They rolled him out on 50 some odd stations instantly, and you know, for years the Heritage Foundation was giving him a couple million bucks a year. So you know, they did it right. And in 96, when Clinton signed the Telco Act, and I believe his show started right around then. I could be wrong. I think it started, well, in any case, might have started before that. But then that was when Clear Channel went from just having a handful of stations in the Southeast to having over 1,000 stations, you know, within a year or two. So now you've got these basically, you know, radio and television empires, Sinclair on the television side, Salem and Clear Channel, or what used to be Clear Channel, iHeartRadio on the radio side, where it's just, you know, it's just dominated by right wing talk radio. I wrote the original business plan for Air America Radio back in 2002. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's why I started my show, was as a proof of concept, because my show's been on, was on for a year before Air America came along, and I helped, you know, birth the network. And we leased 57 stations from Clear Channel, and we had a really good footprint. I mean, you know, we had millions of listeners. We were in every major metro market in the United States and in a lot of rural states. And there was a pretty broad consensus in the Democratic Party that in 2008, we helped elect Barack Obama. But then after Obama was elected in 2008, Mitt Romney decided that he was going to run 4 years later in 2012. And so he had his company, Bain Capital, buy Clear Channel. And within 2 years, they had taken all of our stations down and flipped them to sports programming, mm-hmm. which put Air America out of business.
Wow. This is such a wild story. I didn't know about the backstory, but reading your column, you write about this. It just shows the power of, in this case, a venture capital firm, Bain Capital, how they could single-handedly flip programming from Air America to sports.
Yeah. And of course, all those Clear Channel pods, you know, they're multiple station pods. They all had right-wing programming to begin with. United States Senator had invited one of the two billionaire brothers who had bought the second largest radio network in America at the time, to his office to meet with me. And the senator said to this guy, you know, Tom's pulling great ratings. He's beating Rush Limbaugh in a half a dozen markets. And he's got a great show. You've got 900 radio stations and you've got right-wing programming on over 300 of them. Why don't you put his show on some of your stations? And the guy just right up front said, I will never put somebody on the air who wants to raise my taxes.
Wow.
So there you go.
That's incredible. And then when you look at the effects of all of this, you have a piece you wrote back in May called The Press, What Has Happened to the Lifeblood of Our Democracy? And you point out with citations, and this one, I had to do a double take. Only half of Americans know that Trump set up and wanted the end of Roe, while 1 in 5 think President Biden is responsible for it.
Yeah, according to polls, you know, it's not my opinion. That's wow. What I think it was Pew found that. Yeah, it's one of the big polling companies.
This is incredible. And then more trust Republicans with the economy than Democrats, even though we know that they're going to pass even more massive tax cuts for the wealthy. Only a third of Americans know Republicans appointed the majority on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and on top of that, from the time of Ronald Reagan till today, Republicans have created a total of 1 million jobs, a total, during all those Republican administrations, 1 million jobs, and the Democrats have created nearly 50 million. So, you know, who does better with the economy? It's just that it never gets talked about, you know, and Democrats don't blow their horn enough, frankly.
What are you hearing, given that you're on the air 3 hours a day on Sirius XM? What are you hearing from listeners?
Well, a lot of frustration, a lot of concern about the election. Is there a specific area where you're?
Well, because Sirius XM, I mean, Megyn Kelly's also on Sirius XM. So do you get a wide range of listeners beyond progressives?
My show is not just on Sirius XM. We're also on, a couple of dozen commercial radio stations around the country. We're on probably about 100 Pacifica nonprofit stations around the country, and including some fairly big ones, you know, like KPFK in Los Angeles. And we're also live streamed on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and now Substack, which is actually where my daily column appears, and it's free. It's at hartmanreport.com on Substack. Okay. So I we get a pretty good variety of callers. The callers from Sirius XM, what's interesting about that is that I really like it when right-wingers call my show and want to argue with me. I think it's not only entertaining, but it also provides an opportunity to actually discuss issues and in a way that people want to hear. Right. And most of the right-wing calls that I get are not from the stations that I'm on, the terrestrial stations that I'm on, because those tend to self-select. You tend to get, you know, progressives listening to progressive radio. But on Sirius XM, there's two other talk radio stations. One's full-blown conservative, and the other one's mostly conservative. And so people are just like tuning across the dial, and they hit my show and go, oh, you know, and then they call in and start yelling at me. So I it's kind of fun, actually.
Wow, that's actually great, because you're actually getting outside of the bubble. Yeah. Today, we're joined by Tom Hartman, a nationally syndicated talk show host. His show airs daily from 9 to noon Pacific time. You can see it on many platforms. Find a link at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. And Tom is on the air when we're on the air, so we're actually pre-taping this show, so I'm sorry we cannot take your phone calls. Tom, I want to also ask you about your latest column about what a second Trump presidency would mean. And I think what's disturbing right now is, because he's saying these crazy things on the campaign trail and screaming about getting your fat Joe off the couch and swaying to music for 30 minutes, so many people are focusing on that instead of what he would actually do if he wins. You write, his first step would be to gut the press.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just the beginning. But he has said that the way that he would do it is by changing the nation's libel laws. Mm. This is something that Viktor Orban and Vladimir Putin both did. Right now, in most countries, public figures can't be sued for libel, or can't sue for libel, rather. You know, if you said something terrible about me, I'm a public figure, I can't sue you. If you said it about your sister-in-law, she probably could. And so what both Putin and Orban did was they changed their libel laws so that they themselves could sue media outlets who said things they didn't like. And basically, they sued all of the media in Russia and Hungary out of business. Mm-hmm. And then their billionaire buddies bought those media outlets, radio, television, newspapers, out of bankruptcy. And so all of the media in Hungary and Russia right now is like, you know, kind of the equivalent of Fox News. It's all, you know, dear leader all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what Trump has said he's going to do. He said that dozens of times. He said it, you know, probably hundreds of times over the years, that he wants to change the nation's libel laws. So that's almost always the first thing dictators do when they seize control of a country, is they basically shut down the press, because then all the other things that they want to do, they can do in darkness. And then, you know, after they do that, then they start the arrests. Then they purge the government. They fire all the senior staff, people, particularly in the military and the police agencies, that might be able to hold them to account. And then they start arresting people. And Trump has said he's going to do both of those things too. I mean, this is not speculation on my part. I mean, there's a quote in the article. He said, using the DOJ and FBI to go after their political opponent, that means that I can do it too. In other words, the Pandora's box is open, and that means I can do it too. He said he will arrest Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Alvin Bragg, Fannie Willis, Letitia James, Jack Smith, and all their staffs. And then he wants to start rounding up Americans, you know. Operation Aurora, he calls it.
And Tom, I think what's so tough about this is we've been doing a whole series on Project 2025, talking about their plans to fire civil servants and then hire MAGA loyalists. And so many of the guests that come on say the problem is most Americans say, oh, that could never happen here. So what's your response to that? Someone's listening to you right now saying, come on, Tom, that's never going to happen in this country.
Well, Trump tried this when he was president, and he had attorney generals and secretaries of defense and you know, other leaders within government who simply refused to go along with it. Jim Mattis talks about this on two different occasions. Trump wanted him to shoot demonstrators in the legs, but he wanted them, you know, he wanted live ammunition used against them, which is, you know, against the Posse Comitatus law and is just wrong. He ordered his attorney general to investigate Hillary Clinton with the intention of prosecuting her. And the attorney general refused. I don't recall if that was Jeff Sessions or if that was, you know, he had several attorney generals. I don't recall which one. But at two different occasions, he had ordered prosecutorial investigations of Hillary Clinton. He wanted to lock her up. He just couldn't get anybody to go along with him. Well, this time he's made it very clear he's not going to have those kind of people in his cabinet. He's not going to have those kind of people working for him. He's going to hire he's going to have a loyalty test. You're going to have to sign an oath swearing loyalty not to the Constitution and not to the United States of America, but to Donald Trump personally. And, you know, again, this is no secret.
Right. So. And then you mentioned the mass deportation plan.
Yeah, he's said that he wants to have private prison contractors build massive concentration camps that can hold millions and millions of people. And he's said he's going to go after people who are legally in this country, like the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio. You know, as long as they've got dark skin, he's declared that on more than one occasion, he's declared that he wants to strip citizenship from black people who have acquired U.S. citizenship, who've gone through the naturalization process, and deport them. In contrast, he also said we should have more people from Norway. He has no problem with white people coming into the country. I mean, it's a very, very racist thing. When Eisenhower tried something like this in 1956, it was called Operation Wetback, which is now considered pretty offensive, but that was the official name of the program.
Right.
They scooped up a little short of a million people, and an estimated 20,000 were actually U.S. citizens who just couldn't grab their citizenship papers at the time that the police came knocking on their door, and so they ended up in Mexico, and many of them never made it back.
Wow. And so, I think the scary thing about Trump too, and what's different today, is that he has so many followers who are armed.
Yeah. This is that was my column today. In fact, is a second civil war possible? Because Trump is talking about that basically, and he's got, you know, there's 400 million guns in America, and his followers are far more well armed than Democrats. And the amazing thing that I discovered when I was researching today's column was that, typically when civil wars are started throughout history, they're not started by the downtrodden. It's not the Les Mis that's rising up. Civil wars are started by the wealthy and powerful who see the potential for the loss of their wealth and power. And that's what the Republican Party is looking at right now as America browns. You know, Texas is now majority minority, and the entire United States will be in 15 years. And the Republicans are freaking out. This is the kind of thing that drove the civil war in Serbia, for example, was ethnic changes, essentially, as the borders of the countries were realigned. It's what drove the civil war in Lebanon. There have been multiple civil wars that have been driven by people in power trying to hold on to power in the face of demographic change because they represent a particular race or a particular religion or a particular regional or language group. That's certainly Trump. I'm very concerned about it. I'm convinced that if he becomes president, he will try to start a civil war.
Wow. You're reminding me of a piece that Susan Glasser just wrote in The New Yorker, how Republican billionaires learned to love Trump again. So these are incredibly wealthy people who criticized him after January 6th, but now they're fully on board again.
Yeah, my dad, when I was younger and he was still alive, gave me for my birthday a book by Fritz Thyssen titled I Paid Hitler. It was written in the late 40s, early 50s. It's out of print now. But Fritz Thyssen was arguably the most powerful and wealthiest industrialist in Germany in 1933. He was the guy who put up 3 million Reichsmarks to finance Hitler's rise to power. He was the guy who talked Hindenburg into making Hitler chancellor. And he thought he could control Hitler. He and all his rich industrialist buddies, they were all gung-ho for Hitler. And within 3 years, he and his entire family had to flee the country because Hitler was going to kill him.
You also write about abortion. And again, you've got 80% of the country supporting reproductive rights. And yet, as you write, J.D. Vance, and a lot of people are finally starting to talk more about J.D. Vance because, I mean, Trump is just deranged and obviously not doing well. J.D. Vance personally oversees the enforcement of the Comstock Act with the approval of 6 Republicans on the Supreme Court. The law is already on the books. It bans all abortions and pornography nationwide. And J.D. Vance has already written a 2023 letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland demanding it be enforced immediately. So again, this is a failure of major media, Tom, because Trump and his supporters have come out and said, oh, he's not going to sign a national ban, and the media ran with it.
Well, what's interesting is that Trump and J.D. Vance have both said that when they mean ban, when they use the word ban, what they mean is an abortion ban that has no exceptions for rape or incest, an absolute, universal, total, period, no exception for the life of the mother. And of course, there is no such thing. There are bans in some of the states that don't have exceptions for rape or incest, but all of them have exceptions for the life of the mother. So they're just being very disingenuous in their language. When Trump says he won't sign a ban, that's what he's talking about. It's something that doesn't even have a proviso for the life of the mother. The reality is that they will. J.D. Vance has demanded that the Comstock Act be enforced, which not only would end all abortion in the United States, because it would ban the shipping of through the mail, through FedEx, through UPS, through any means at all, the shipping of not just abortion pills, but any device that could be used to produce an abortion. So the suction devices and surgical devices would just no longer be available to hospitals and abortion clinics. But interestingly, it also bans pornography. Mm-hmm. And I'm just surprised that some smart Democrat hasn't jumped on that one. Because the largest consumers of pornography in the United States are the red states. Mm-hmm. So that one should really work.
A few other things on your list. Jared Kushner will begin developing, quote, beachfront properties on the land previously known as Gaza.
Yeah, he said he wants to do this.
All U.S. efforts to mitigate climate change and shift away from a carbon-based economy are ended as a gift to Trump's fossil fuel donors, and the Trump administration will outlaw teachers' unions. There are a few other things on the list here, and again, I hope people can read this column. Final question to you, Tom. Why do you think Donald Trump still has so much support in this country?
Because he's a racist. I had never in my life prior to the last 9 years believed that white racism was as deep and widespread as it is. I should have known. My black friends have been telling me this for decades. Mm. But I figured, it was a 20% fringe maybe. But it's clearly, maybe 30, 40%, maybe even more than that, of white people are willing to put their racism ahead of, frankly, their own well-being. And then, of course, in this particular race, there's a large element of misogyny, and there was in 2016 as well with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So between white men who hate racial minorities, religious minorities, and women, basically, Trump's got quite a constituency.
And do you believe what we're hearing on a daily basis, that the race is very, very close?
I think it probably is. Yeah, at least in the swing states, in large part because the billionaires' money is hitting. I wrote a column about 2 months ago when, you know, everything looked like it was going to be Kamala Harris, you know, coming up roses, and said, just wait, the billionaires' money. I mean, they've raised about $6 billion in dark money for this election on the right. And I said, just wait, the money hasn't started to hit. And if you talk to anybody, Rose, in any of the swing states, they will tell you that the ads against Kamala Harris, you know, accusing her of wanting to give illegal immigrant prisoners trans sex change operations and other things that are just designed to inflame conservatives, they're just vicious and unrelenting. I mean, just it's overwhelming. And then they've got mailers and they've got phone bank. You know, it's a full court press. And now you've got, you know, the richest man in the world giving $1 million a day, basically bribing people illegally, by the way. It's a crime. To register to vote or to vote.
Tom, do you think we'll ever get rid of the Electoral College in our lifetime?
Yeah, I think in our lifetime, maybe. The National Compact, the National Interstate Compact, is up to 240 or 30, something like that, electoral college votes. It has to hit 271 for it to replace the Electoral College, which means that, you know, it's going to take a couple of red states flipping in that direction. So it'll probably be, you know, in the next decade, but I don't think it'll survive much more than a decade.
Tom Hartman is a nationally syndicated talk show host. His show airs daily from 9 to noon Pacific time on a number of platforms. He's the author of many books and writes a regular Substack column. You can learn more about Tom's important work at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Tom, thanks so much for your work, and thank you for joining us. And when you have a bit more time, we'd love to have you back.
Thanks, Rose. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.